Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in June 2024. How you doing tonight, James?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. This was a bit of a weird month for me.
Oh, why?
Because I got 46 comics.
Okay.
Out of those, how do you think they split between Marvel, DC, and other?
Okay. Based on what we've been experiencing, I think other might be your biggest now.
It was, actually. I was surprised by that. It was 19 of them.
Wow. Yeah, my other is getting bigger than my Marvel and DC too. And I think it goes with the general trend of like we've been dissatisfied with what we've been getting from Marvel and DC in general. Specifically, there's some great comics. But and by the way, my count's not far off. I only received 53 single issues. So we're right there together.
Yeah. Like I said, the 19 others, 17 from Marvel, only 10 from DC.
Wow. Believe it or not, I think I got more DC than you. I filtered my list. I got 12 DC, so only two more. But DC, they don't put out as much. And some of the things I was getting, there's one thing I already canceled, or DC canceled it for me, which was the Green Lantern War Journal. That went to issue, I think, 11, yeah. And it's done. So, and it wasn't good the entire way.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. It was that thing I should have cut at issue 3.
Yeah, when I look at my change breakdown, and this is, again, theoretically, if everything was coming out once a month, how much more or less would I be spending next month based on what came in, what went away and stuff. This is another month where it looks like I'd be down 4 comics for a total of almost $18, $17.96, because of course they always end in the 99. And most of that, actually, it's one DC, one other, and two for Marvel is the net change.
Yeah, I can see that. I would say I went through the Marvel's previews catalog, which we just sent in. Mm-hmm. The clips are 200, and I got my order form. And I noticed there was big swaths of the Marvel catalog. It's like Venom War. I'm not reading any of the Venom stuff. And there's so many books tied into that. And they had another section that I'm just like, I'm not into that. So it's like, I'm skipping all of the Star Wars stuff. I'm skipping all this Venom. They put so many writers and so many books out in that world that if you're not reading that, you can get rid of 40% of their books with just a snap of a finger.
Yeah, yeah. I don't tend to do much in like the collected editions. So the last third of the catalog almost is, I'll flip through. If there's something good, I'll pick it up. But normally I don't get much there. Like you said, there's the Star Wars section, which I was big into, and it's good stuff. It's just I'd had enough of it, so I cut back. And then, yeah, once I take out Venom, Bloodhunt for me, and a few things like that, it decimates what they've got.
Yeah. And to your point with Star Wars, I was enjoying it, but when they relaunched Star Wars and Darth Vader, which were the two titles I got, like at issue 50, I was like, okay, well, I'm relaunching myself out of this universe.
They gave you a jumping off point and you took it.
Exactly. It was because it was getting too big. It was too much to be all in on that. And I just didn't need. I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the all in phrase, because again, at one point I was essentially, if not literally, all in at Marvel and DC. Those days are gone. That ended years ago before the pandemic. But DC is made an announcement that they're going to be creating an absolute universe, which is kind of sort of, but not quite their version of the Ultimate Universe.
Yep.
Which Marvel's on their second iteration of. So DC's picking up on this trend quickly.
Exactly.
But they're also got a branding or an initiative or something like that called All In.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not going to rule out that it may get me all out.
That's what I'm starting to think, because some of the things are not exciting. You know what I mean by that. It's just like, do I really need this? Nah, not really. I think it's going to be fewer and fewer titles. And it's a little bit unfortunate because those are the bread and butter for the comic shops, you know, Marvel and DC typically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm getting so much joy and enjoyment from a lot of the indie books, which don't keep the lights on, but that's really what I'm enjoying. Maybe that's because I'm getting older. I just don't know. I mean, every Marvel and DC story has been written. They can write it in good ways, and still I would buy it. But it seems like they're going for the gimmick versus the good story that's maybe been told with a little twist on it.
I think we still get some new things out of Marvel and DC that I haven't seen before, but there are fewer and further between.
Yeah.
Because when you've got 80 years of history, you've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
But I think I really wish the sales data was available to see how these publishers are really doing. Because I'm hearing that DC is losing sales and stuff, but that may be based on Comic Hub, which is only, you know, a selection of retailers that may or may not be representative, stuff like that. But again, I'm seeing my buying shift towards the other publishers. Is that just me and the things that are happening to come out and what I like? Or is that a bit more widespread and there's really kind of no way to know these days?
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of flying in the dark. And one of the conundrums and the disappointments coming out of the breaking up of the monopoly that was Diamond, you know, when Diamond did it, whether you wanted your numbers disclosed or not, there they were.
Yeah.
That was good, in my opinion.
The funny thing is, the monopoly that was Diamond obviously no longer is, hasn't been since the start of the pandemic. We've traded that for multiple monopolies.
Yeah.
And it's funny because having done the sales numbers for, what, 15 years or something like that publicly, and having done it privately for a better part of a decade prior to that, when I was doing it publicly, the amount of vitriol and hate of, oh, this is ruining the industry. Oh, these aren't the real numbers. Oh, this, that, and the other. And now there's a longing for the good old days when we had the numbers.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I really miss those days. And although, hey, those aren't real sales, those are gimmicks, at least we had something and we knew how the industry was trending.
Well, they were all real sales. Whether they were good sales in the type that were healthy for the industry, totally different case.
Yeah, but whether they ended up in 50 long boxes in one shop, this money was made for the company.
Yeah. Well, and is DC doing the absolute thing out of creativity or desperation? How is Blood Hunt doing as an event? These are things that we'll probably never know. And I think we're very telling when we had the information to see, hey, here's how this one event boosted these sales of these minor titles to the equivalent of, you know, in some cases, four or five times what they had been selling in the extreme cases, of course. And that can extend the title's longevity for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. And now we really can't see that. I mean, I always questioned, hey, is it better to have these little 3 and 4 issue miniseries that don't mess up the books when they're doing an event? Or is it better to maybe boost the sales and put it in Doctor Strange or Action Comics or whatever? Does that maybe help? Because someone who isn't picking up Action and wants the whole story, maybe they pick up an extra copy. Who knows?
Well, just to go on this digression a little bit further, from an abstract point of view, you're better off having fewer titles that sell more because there's less creative costs.
Yep.
You're better off having sales boosted on ongoing titles where you can leverage that interest over the longer haul versus a miniseries that at the end of which those sales vanish.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, there's some things like that from a strictly kind of pragmatic pie in the sky kind of view that I think are fairly obvious. But then it's also running afoul of how they're actually producing comics because they're either reliant on or desperate for the sales from a new number one from revoluming or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a vicious cycle. We keep seeing it over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. We just don't have the visibility we once did to see it, though, is the problem.
Exactly.
It's kind of funny. But I'm curious because, again, I'm hearing things implying DC's not doing great and I'm down to 10 titles for them.
Yeah, and I'm down to 12, and it will be 11, unless I've added anything. And for the life of me, I can't remember if I added anything. But, you know, for everything maybe that you add, there's something that goes away. You know, yeah. Like I was getting Action Comics because, hey, Jason Aaron's on it. And then, oh, there's this House of Brainiac, but now I don't feel any need to be on Action Comics. So that's probably going away for me.
Yeah, I think they've geared it to where the readers who want to get off between arcs and stuff, they're making it much easier for them to do that.
Yeah. It's not something that I'm there for if that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, shall we dive into DC?
Yeah, I got it filtered, got my 12 comics up, and you go first, sir.
All right. I am going to start with Action Comics and Superman with the whole House of Brainiac stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Those were two that I like both of them.
I like both of them. They both came out the same day, which is a little weird. I would have had them staggered by 2 weeks, just keep the story momentum going.
Thank God I read them in alphabetical order because I didn't look part 5, part 6. So
I did the same thing. I almost read them in the wrong order, but it having no better idea, I went alphabetical. The number's right there on the cover. I should have seen it.
Yeah. I just happenstance to read it the right way.
Yeah. With Action Comics, I loved the scene where Luthor is basically putting on a Brainiac helmet. Because, that is just, it's evocative of stuff back in the Bronze Age of Luthor Brainiac team-ups. And it just, that's something that I don't think we got much out of in terms of how scary that could have been. That could have spun off into an issue or two easily just on its own.
Yeah, I agree. That was really cool.
But overall, the House of Brainiac was a much better arc than I had expected.
Me too.
Still a bit of shock at all in places, but overall it was good. And in Action Comics, I appreciated the backup story that kind of clarified Lena Luthor, her continuity, how it fits into the main story and all this stuff. Because let's face it, DC's continuity is a mess.
It is.
They chucked the baby with the bathwater when they did the New 52. Rebirth pulled some stuff in. They did a few other switcheroos with the Superman stuff. So knowing what the hell happened in the backstory is a crapshoot these days at DC.
True.
Which I don't think is helping their sales any.
Exactly.
So clarifying what her backstory actually was nice.
I agree. It was a nice little touch.
And then I thought Superman 15 was a solid end to the House of Brainiac arc.
Yeah, they stuck the landing, I felt like.
They stuck the landing, and there was a very interesting spin with Luthor there at the end that I'm curious how plays out and where it plays out.
I agree. Did you feel like they were setting up the female character to replace the male character just for the whole absolute power?
Yeah, kind of.
That's how I came out of it. I was like, yeah, okay, that's what we're doing.
Well, and there was also a character that was having very clear origins a la Superman's origin.
Yeah. Now, okay, I know that you know a lot about it, but I don't know a ton about it, but all those little worlds that Brainiac had on his ship,
mm-hmm.
I kind of liked how they were going to save things, and then I don't think all of them got saved, and I wonder if we'll see any ramifications from that, or I'm just wondering how that'll play off, or it's just going to be a dead end, and it just goes to who knows where.
If it's a dead end, it's a mistake.
I agree.
I think it was an interesting way that they kind of dealt with the bottled cities.
Yes.
I find it also interesting that this times out with the end of the John Stewart Green Lantern series. And the reason I say that is John Stewart had a series called Green Lantern Mosaic back in the day, where the status quo for where he was similar to the status quo with the end of the Bottled Cities.
Ah, okay. Okay. So very similar.
So not saying they're repeating themselves, but kind of, sort of.
All right. I did enjoy that, and I was wondering if we will see something pop up from that, and I don't know if we will, but I'm hoping we do.
If we don't, why set it up?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that was a nice setup, and I'm glad you did those two issues, because my first pick is going to be a two as well, because we got Absolute Power Ground Zero and Absolute Power.
Did Absolute Power come out this month? I thought that came out at the beginning of July.
Okay, well, I got it in my shipment. I don't know.
I got it in my shipment, but I'm pretty sure it's a July thing. So I haven't read it yet. I saved it for next month.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll talk about Absolute Power Ground Zero then.
Sorry.
It was okay. The Absolute Power Ground Zero. It was not great, but it was like weird because we got like different writers writing their different little stories. So you start off with Mark Waid, and it starts with like the Superboy and John's boyfriend. I can't remember what that guy's name is, but whatever.
Jamie Nakamura?
Something like that. I can never remember his name. That name section has broken my head. They get hunted and captured, and betrayal happens. And then you roll in, and then it switches over, and it rolls into a story about Waller getting Failsafe kind of back up and running. And because I hadn't been reading Batman, and I know you haven't, I didn't know Failsafe was kind of like down and out to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of like the revelation, getting my feet underneath me for the story. I was like, oh, I guess he got beat somehow. Apparently, I didn't read that. And then we're appearing to create the army of, at the time, I was thinking Failsafes, but I don't think they're going to be Failsafes.
No.
I think they're going to be something else, because I didn't read Absolute Power number one. And we get the Williamson story, which was, we get some of the fallout of the House of Brainiac and what's happening with Waller. So I thought it was a nice setup because it prepared me for that first issue in case I hadn't been reading Batman, which I hadn't, or I hadn't been reading any of those books.
Like Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I wasn't reading Suicide Squad. So I feel like I was prepared. It's almost like instead of having that big paragraph at the front of a Marvel comic, they did that comic form and actually made a heck of a lot of money doing it that way.
this could have just as easily been Absolute Power number zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they set up Dreamer as a key player in the event, and not having read the Suicide Squad stuff she's been in, I appreciated that.
Yep.
They set up Time Commander as a new member of the Suicide Squad, and I'm not sure where he was from.
Me neither.
That gets Failsafe into the mix.
Yep.
And then we get the whole fallout from the House of Brainiac stuff, including a time compression kind of a thing there that was kind of interesting. Setting somebody up to be a loyal minion that probably otherwise we would not have expected, but hey, you got 20 years, you've got time. And I think it absolutely set the stage for Absolute Power.
Yeah, I agree. So it was a good, it wasn't great because you're getting snippets of stories by different writers, but it got my bearings set so that I know where I am for the things I wasn't reading.
Yeah.
Which is what I needed. Yeah, so it was decent. That was a decent one, and it was, I guess, the big one for the month, so I brought it up.
Sounds good.
All right, back to you, John.
I'm going to go with Nightwing number 15.
115.
115, sorry, 115, yeah.
Yeah, as I say, you're hitting rewind way back years
ago.
Yeah,
way back. No sign of the mountaintop that the arc started on, so little annoying.
Yeah.
Definitely an interesting issue. Some huge status quo changes in a couple of ways.
Yes.
Ends on a massive cliffhanger, reveal, twist, whatever you want to call it, that definitely puts the next issue in a very firm direction. I'm really curious where this goes over the next three issues, which is what's going to conclude the Taylor Redondo run.
I agree.
And just some great stuff.
It was great, and it felt like they're back hitting their marks back at the beginning of the book with what we enjoyed. So I was really happy for it. And I think we only get five issues in this last arc, and then they're gone, which is a little bit disappointing because this was one of those consistent titles that both of us have been really enjoying. I'm hoping the next team is good. I don't know.
I think the big question is it going to be Nightwing 119 or Nightwing number 1 or something else?
Yeah, I mean, for all we know, and I'm not making this up, this is not spoiling anything in here. You know, it could be Nightwing number 1 with a new sister being the Nightwing for all we know. We just have no clue where this is going.
There are a ton of different directions they could go. I mean, they did Dick Grayson as a spy for one series.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if they're going to do the relaunch or they're just going to change a creative team because this was such a good team, it's going to be hard to follow.
If it was Marvel, I'd say they'd absolutely do the relaunch.
Yes, they would as well.
DC is more likely, I think, to go with a 119.
Yeah, I agree.
But I enjoyed it. A lot of fun.
All right, over to me for my second. I'm going to go with Green Arrow number 13.
Okay.
Now, it was a decent read, and I liked the ending of the last arc a little bit better, but this issue was all set up for the Absolute Power, and Ollie finally gets the whole family back together just to see things like kind of crumble with his dreams and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it sets up a status change where I think it's going to directly impact everything that's going to happen in Absolute Power moving forward.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun issue, setting up the kind of the Arrow family's involvement in Absolute Power.
Yep.
And let's face it, the Arrow family's pretty big these days.
Yeah.
The question I had, and this goes to DC's continuity is a mess, was Connor Hawk Green Arrow before in this timeline?
I don't know.
Because his backstory with Ollie, to me, is a little unclear. Yet, if you read the older Green Arrow comics, Connor was the title character for the longest time, or for a while.
Yeah, and it's almost like that didn't happen the way this was set up before.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, that's the way I was taking it. That never happened, and this is going to be, it felt like the first time type thing.
I almost need to reread the Robin issue Connor showed up in, where he's on the island and they're having the tournament.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good issue.
They may or may not have addressed his backstory better there.
Yeah, it definitely was not addressed here at all. And it set him up to be center stage.
Yeah, great character. I love it. And I'm enjoying this run of Green Arrow. I think they're really building up the team aspect. And doing it in a way that's not like, oh, it's Team Arrow like we had on the TV show. No, no. This is the comic version of what Team Arrow would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, ton of fun.
I agree. So what's going to be your last pick? Not much to pick from.
I've got two I could go with, and I'm debating which one.
What two?
Batman, Superman, World's Finest, and Wonder Woman.
Okay. I'm not picking either one of those, so.
Yeah, we'll go Batman, Superman's World's Finest.
The imps.
The imps. We've gotten a lot more of the imps than I usually can stomach, but Mark Waid's doing a good job with them.
Yeah.
We got something there that I don't think has ever been done before, And given how long some of these characters like Batman, Superman, and et cetera, have been around, they've had the better part of a century to do some of these things. So to get something new out of that didn't surprise me at all from Mark Waid. It was a ton of fun. It made sense. And it was a, how hadn't we gotten that before? Again, fun story, kind of a brutal final page.
Yes.
But I'm enjoying what we're getting.
Yeah, it was decent. Personally, I just can't wait for the imps to be gone. I'm not a fan, but that's just me.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
They have not outstayed their welcome yet, but the minute they're gone, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Now, just out of curiosity, did you really like the or not like the Wonder Woman title?
I thought it was great art on a glacially slow story.
Literally, I put, this book has really good art. I was bored to tears. Those are my notes. It was so slow.
My other note is this needs to pick up the pace or change writers or I might drop the title.
Yeah, it's that bad. It was okay, cool. We're in the same boat.
What did you think of the backup story of that one?
I can't remember the backup because I didn't put notes on it. Remind me, jog my memory.
It was another of Damian and John babysitting Trinity.
Oh, yeah. I didn't enjoy it. It didn't work for me.
Cute, but pointless.
Exactly. It cutesy and what's the point of this? Do I need to be reading this? No.
Yeah.
Okay. So my last pick?
Yeah.
I hope I picked the right month. I hope I didn't pick a book from July. Justice Society of America 10. Did you get that?
I'm pretty sure that's a July one.
All right. Well, based on that, I'll talk about Green Lantern number 12.
Sorry.
Apparently, I got some July books in my last June shipment.
I got a couple too, and it confused the hell out of me. So I went and checked when certain things are coming out because...
Okay, I just read them and put notes because I read what I get. So I'm sorry.
No, I don't blame you at all. I blame the chaos of the multi-distributor world of time is not what it used to be.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about Green Lantern. It was a decent issue. Not as good as the previous ones, I think. Basically, Hal and all the Green Lanterns are fighting and having to run as the, basically, they call them the Ring Hunters are kind of taking them to task. They, you know, they're hunting for the people who have rings. And there's a rescue scene that kind of happens, which was okay. But I think the reason that this story wasn't just like a B-type story is the backup in this was horrible art, hard to read. It kind of dragged. It was so bad, it drug it down like a half a grade point to like that C-plus level, if that makes sense.
It's funny because I think you're reading off my notes. It was a decent story. The backup had not terrific art.
I'm like, oh my God, it was so bad, wasn't it? I was like, what are we doing here? What is going on?
Well, the other thing with the backup is just out of the blue, and I'm going to put that in quotes, no pun intended, given the spectrum and stuff of characters here. Guy finds a plot device if I ever saw one.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is going to be something. And it was so haphandedly handled that it just, you may as well have had arrows pointing at it saying MacGuffin or plot device. I mean, it may be of use or meaning later, but it was not subtle storytelling in the backup.
It was not.
I did like seeing Carol the Star Sapphire again in the lead.
I agree.
And I thought they ended on a note that changed some status quo stuff for the better. And I'm curious where some of that goes.
I would agree. Yeah. But overall, the two of the books I wanted to talk about came out in July. So there's that.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. Surprise.
Yeah, I had gotten, I think, the first week of July in with the shipment, and part of it's just I'm getting the monthly shipment and stuff like that. But I'm trying to just go with whatever had a release date in the given month.
That's good of you. I didn't even think to check, and it seems like it's DC's the worst with that.
DC's the worst on the releasing, and it's DC and or Lunar, but I think Marvel's worse on it with the solicits.
Yeah, DC with the shipping to the shops, they'll ship things early, and the shops just ship it out, and then, oh, this wasn't in this month. And then, yeah, with the ordering, every single month, there's two or three things that you can order, but are not in the catalog, or vice versa. They're in the catalog, but you can't order them, you know? It's like, yeah. Good Lord.
It was much easier back when there was one catalog, everything that was in the catalog was on the order form, stuff like that. It's just nuts these days.
I miss Diamond.
Well, you can't miss them yet. They're still around, but soon, who knows?
Soon, yeah. Yeah.
Jump over to Marvel.
Yeah, I filtered my list where I did receive 22 Marvel.
I got 17.
Okay, cool. You want to go first?
Sure.
All right, go for it.
I'm going to start with Ultimates number 1.
Oh, that's a good pick.
I thought it was a really good first issue.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm liking this version of the Ultimates, I think, a bit more than the original. Granted, it's been, I don't know how many years since I read the original when it started. And I appreciate that there's kind of a ticking clock aspect that should keep the story moving.
Yes, I like that.
And I think they're doing some interesting stuff. This Dennis Camp, matter of fact, I think he was one that I called out in one of my preview spotlight clips of who is this guy? I don't recognize him. I still don't, but he wrote this, did a good job.
Yeah, Dennis Camp, I've seen that name. I know I must have read something by him, but I was surprised when I saw this come out. And I was like, I don't really know him, but he did a really pretty good job. I like it. One thing that I thought was just so weird, the Tony that we have in this book,
mm-hmm.
How's that Iron Lad thing sitting with you? Do you like that?
It's a callback of sorts, whether it's intentional or not, to the Iron Lad of the Young Avengers, which was Young Kang. And it feels like a bit of a callback to the Teen Tony era of Iron Man.
Yeah.
Neither of which I think were particularly high points of anything. I mean, don't get me wrong. Young Avengers is great.
Yeah.
Iron Lad, not so much.
Exactly.
So I got mixed feelings on the Tony here.
Yeah, I agree. I have mixed feelings on that. I thought the name was just kind of funny and hilarious. And then the Doom thing is kind of interesting too, who Doom is. And
yeah.
I was like, huh, all right.
They're going to lean heavy into that in the fourth issue.
I agree. And like you said, the ticking time clock is going to be interesting because that's the event that we see on the horizon.
Yeah.
And I like it.
I'll be honest. This was one that based on the cover, the mix of characters and how the original Ultimate series went, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'll get this or not, but I went ahead and got it. And I'm glad I did.
Very cool. All right. I'm glad you did too, because I did enjoy that book.
All right. What you got next?
Let's keep it in the Ultimate universe. I'm going to go with Ultimate Spider-Man number 6.
Okay.
Okay, the one downside to this title is it does move pretty slow, in my opinion.
Yes.
It's focused so much on characterization versus story momentum. So if you are a big fan of characterization, this is your book. You know, Peter's shown with the after effects of an altercation, you know, basically a black eye. And it's him talking with his kids, his daughter lets slip, and the whole family knows about who he is. You know, he's a superhero at this point. And it's all about talking about an event with family moments. And I think if you are a person, like I said, who likes characterization and likes family, the story of a family and the tight bonds of a family, you're going to love this. You know, Green Goblin and Spider-Man team up against Wilson Fisk. That's not the story. The story is about the family interconnection and how they're dealing with their new change in the dad. And I just thought it was very nice. It was beautifully written. And for something that the action wasn't the main thing, it had enough action to keep you engaged and it fleshed the characters out even more.
I would agree with all of that. I thought this was a good but slow story. We hit the end of the sixth issue here in the first, presumably first trade.
Yeah.
And Peter is finally called Spider-Man.
Exactly. Finally. That was the key. Yeah, he is Spider-Man.
So a six-issue origin, which I think we got that with the original Ultimate Spider-Man 2, so not a big surprise there. How do you think this story would have worked for you if you had no idea who the Kingpin was, who the Green Goblin was, who Peter was, who Mary Jane was from the main or even the other Ultimate Universe?
I don't think it would have worked at all. I think having that knowledge base of knowing where they were going and knowing who these people were is what makes it interesting, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't see that as a flaw in the story at all.
No. It's kind of like that discussion we had with Dark Knights of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't have to do the background work of fleshing out the character and their backstory. You're like, oh, that's the Bruce Wayne, and he just runs with it.
But it's interesting because we've had a similar discussion with Astro City in those spotlights. The difference there is you don't have to have an encyclopedic knowledge of any particular character because it's drawing more on archetypes.
Yeah.
Whereas both here and in Dark Knights of Steel, you need to know about the specific characters and how they normally interact to really appreciate how they're interacting here.
Yeah, it's almost like a cheat code, a shortcut.
Yeah.
That you can bypass really building out a lot of what makes them and focus in this point on characterization or in another point on action, depending on the comic and the writer. But I'll tell you what, I thought how he got his name and the person who gave him the name, perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that was perfect at the end. Brilliant.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I just wonder if they're limiting their audience to people who know enough about the mainstream or previous Ultimate Spider-Man to appreciate this.
Yeah, to your point with that, even though I think this is a wonderful comic, this is not the Spider-Man I point to as a number one for someone to start reading if they knew nothing about the character.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the number one that gets you and me and X-Man Patrick excited because, you know, he's been loving the Ultimate Universe too. But my wife, she'd be like, She'd probably be checked out.
Well, again, we've got Jonathan Hickman, very good writer. We've got Mark Cicchetto, who's just a phenomenal artist. They're not bound by the constraints of the 616 universe. That gives them a lot of freedom as to what they do.
Correct.
And they're using it well and not abusing it, and I appreciate that.
I do too. And overall, those two, the Ultimates and Ultimate Spider-Man, so far, they're the best of the four.
As far as I'm concerned, they're the only parts of the Ultimate line.
That's all you're getting.
That's all I'm getting. I'm not getting Black Panther or X-Men.
Okay, I'm getting Black Panther, and this was my last issue of X-Men. I canceled it at issue four.
I can understand that, yeah.
It was horrible. All right, over to you.
I'm going to go with Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime number one.
Did you like that?
I really wanted to like this more than I did.
I picked it up because of the creative team, and I was like, man, this is boring. I'm sorry. I apologize to the fans out there.
Don't. I mean, it felt exactly how you think a Marvel version of a Scrooge McDuck story would go, in all of the wrong ways.
Yeah, it was bad.
Multiversal shenanigans, breakneck pace that glosses over the story, a story that felt like it was almost an illustrated story where the text narrated the art versus kind of providing the dialogue. And if you want a good Scrooge McDuck story, go read like The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. That stuff is awesome.
Yeah.
If you want another multiversal team-up of the same character in a Marvel-esque style, like we've gotten with Jessica Jones, Spider-Girl, I think, most recently with Wolverine, we also got it with, I think, the Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's been all over the place, yeah.
I mean, they've done it for, it seems like, most of the characters. If you want another one of those with a billion alternate covers, this is the comic for you.
And that's not for me.
I was disappointed with this.
Yeah. Okay. Me, I have not read a lot of Scrooge McDuck. I know there's a lot of fans out there. So people called in on the previous Spotlight clip, and I'm like, I'm going to try it just because I never read Scrooge. And I was like, man, this sucks. And I'm glad to hear you say it's not good, because I was like, I don't get it. It's not very good. It's apparently just this version that I read.
Did you read the backup of Christmas on Bear Mountain?
Yes.
Because that's a classic by Carl Barks. That was good stuff.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. It was a rehash. I knew that. And that was decent. It was just the beginning. The main story was just, not good.
Well, the main story was a what if. What if that story didn't happen? And it never really addressed that story in this story.
Yeah.
And it's like, it should have been better.
I agree. Should have been better.
I was disappointed with this one.
All right. So over to me?
Yep.
All right. I'm debating between the different ones because they're all kind of packed together around the same level. Let's go with Get Fury number two. Okay, this one slowed down a lot from the first issue. The first issue was action-packed, setting up very intense Garth Ennis. So Get Fury number two, it slowed the story way down. So the first one, like I said, was a burner. But we find out the details of what the CIA has been up to over in Laos and also in Vietnam, and how they're funding the peace. Mm-hmm. Basically, the CIA is involved in drugs. I mean, that really happened back in the 80s. That happened over there. This stuff really went down. And it reminded me of like the Iran-Contra scandal that happened, like all that stuff. So it felt like a story that really happened. And Fury is making his way to the Hanoi Hilton, or they're being taken there. And Frank Castle is on his tail trying to get him. But little does Frank Castle know is that the CIA maybe have an alternate plan, because one, they don't want Nick Fury getting his secrets out if he makes it to North Vietnam. And two, they're concerned about Frank Castle, even though they sent him. Now that Fury has made it to Hanoi, maybe we should just take them all out, because this could look really bad if anything got out. So it's almost being set up for betrayal. That's how the story's playing out. But just really fantastic Vietnam War era story. This is Garth Ennis in his element. He does World War II books quite a bit here and there and everywhere. I wish he'd do more Vietnam stuff, just because he has a real knack for it.
Cool.
Yeah, good story.
Awesome. Yeah, I didn't pick that one up, but sounds good if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm into war. All right, over to you. Your last one.
My last one. I've got one, but I feel like I'm going to be beating a dead horse. But hey, it's there, so let's do it.
X-Men 35?
No.
Oh.
What other dead horse do you think I would beat?
I don't know. There's so many. Bloodhunt? No, you're not getting that. Fantastic Four.
Yep.
Right on, it's
right on
Four.
Both. Because it's a Bloodhunt issue.
Yeah, how'd that work for you?
This one is by the numbers. Step one, split up the cast.
It was horrible.
Step two, have the characters act out of character. I mean, Reed Richards was acting like a Vulcan from Star Trek here. Step 3, introduce the threat of the issue, vampires, which somehow Reed doesn't think exists, even though he knows a number of them.
Which doesn't, yeah.
Step 4, have Alicia figure out how to solve the problem. She may be blind, but apparently the others are just stupid, including geniuses like Reed. Because Alicia and Reed are the only real characters in this issue. Step 5, use the powers of the FF in a way that disregards how those powers usually work.
Yep.
At one point, Reed is covering a museum with his body and extrudes his head from various parts of his body, like where his rear end should be.
Yeah.
Step 6, have a token appearance of the rest of the Fantastic Four. I mean, this is a team book after all.
Yeah.
Step 7, have it look like the plan is working out. Step 8, have everything go horribly, horribly wrong so the issue can end on a cliffhanger. Again, by the numbers, Fantastic Four by Ryan North. Horrible, horrible issue for Reed Richards, who seems to have regressed into a teenage, insecure Vulcan somehow. Ryan North is writing Alicia as a stand-in for Squirrel Girl, I think.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, it's like, you know, this story is, and most of these, play out kind of like a classic Squirrel Girl one. Just insert Koi Boy or one of the others for Reed, flip out for the powers and stuff, a few details, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
I have only one more issue on pre-order of this title, and this is, and soon will be, was, the Marvel title I've been getting off the rack the longest.
Sad. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Ryan North, I feel like, doesn't know how to write. The Fantastic Four should have never written this book. There's been moments where it's been good, but it was never the Fantastic Four. It was this character or that character or these two characters. But to your point, Avengers fantastically, and Doctor Strange, I would say at times, were able to incorporate what was going on in Bloodhunt and not leave you confused.
Yeah.
And he took Bloodhunt, stuck it in here. I felt like it didn't make any sense. If you didn't know what was going on in the main title, you're confused. And like you said, like Reed knows vampires in this world. How does he not know they exist? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Do you not know what you're writing? Do you not know this world?
When he gets the pep talk from Alicia.
Yeah.
This is Reed Richards. He's the father's knows best dad of the Marvel Universe. He gives pep talks. He doesn't need one.
Nope. And if anything, he's usually so arrogant, he's looking down and wanting to talk to others. And
I wouldn't say arrogant. I would say absent-minded, professor disconnected.
Yes, that's a perfect way of saying it. Yeah.
So I was just horrified by this. But on the upside, on that last issue I have on pre-order, I'll also get a backup, which is apparently part 3 of a Deadpool Wolverine story that I haven't read the other parts of. So, yay.
There's part 3. I'll read part 1 and part 3, because part 2 is in Captain America that I cut.
I'm still getting Cap, but that's on my list to drop.
Yeah, I think I cut it at issue 12. I think 13 was on this latest order form. I just wasn't getting it. It wasn't good. It sucked.
Well, I mean, 10 came out. It started with too many quotes about London. It's like, sure, you've done your research. I'm not impressed. Then there was JMS trying to show how clever he is with this thing with doors. Steve, Captain America, unknowingly lets a betrayer into the group, but it's telegraphed to us. This is exactly what's happening. It's like, oh, wow. It just doesn't feel like a Captain America story.
It really doesn't.
Yeah, I've got 3 more issues on pre-order of that. I don't know if I'll keep getting it after that.
So over to me for my last one?
Yeah, I snuck another one in. Sorry.
Ah, that's okay. Hey, you get an extra. All right, I'm going to do, since you didn't do it, there's others that I like more, but I figure I'd talk about it since this is a big book, X-Men 35, which is Uncanny 700.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fallout from the Krakoa era, which is coming to an end. This was the one that kind of wrapped it all up in a nice little package. And it felt like they were just undoing everything that had been set up by Jonathan Hickman.
Kind of, 5 years quite.
Ago. Yeah, not exactly, but a lot of it. So Charles has turned himself in. Logan is out to get him. Magneto's still his friend. That's kind of the setup for this whole thing. And then Krakoa, I was trying to figure out, kind of takes himself off to space. He just disappears, I guess. What did you think of that?
We get a 15-year jump for the Return Mutants. That's a game changer.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is an end of the Krakoa era on Earth, but these things are still out there to be used either by themselves or later or elsewhere or what?
So that's what I'm saying. Am I supposed to be thinking of this? It's weird.
They ended Krakoa without cutting it off at the knees or disavowing it or anything of the sort. So I think they did a good blend of that. Now, they had 3 writers on this.
Yes, they did. It was all chopped up. Not in a bad way, but it was chopped up.
I thought they needed them for the various soliloquies various characters had.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple where it's like, good Lord, the letterer's got to be tired from this. So I overall thought it was good. I thought Nightcrawler was a little extreme in one or two places this issue, disappointingly and disgustingly so.
Yeah.
Interesting, quote-unquote, end to the Krakoa era, because they kind of did it where it didn't end, which was nice.
Exactly. Yeah, Krakoa took off into space to, basically, like you said, 15 years in the future, there's something there. So could we revisit it? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and how are they going to reincorporate it? We just don't know.
I don't know that they will reincorporate it, but they have options of these characters either coming back later or having their own adventure, or we see the 15-year gap or whatever. What surprised me is this was a $10 book, $9.99.
It was expensive, yeah.
Overall, it was a good read, and it felt like a decent value for the money.
You got a lot of material.
And I'm even factoring in the gratuitous splash pages they had in the main story, which I thought were a bit of a waste of space.
I would agree. I felt like they set this up to basically have any of the characters that were like the characters that generally aren't cared about. And I hate to say that because someone cares about every character out there, we would think. But like, there's characters that you don't want to see. They could kind of push them off into this pocket world. They're not gone, but they're living over here in Krakoa land. And they could almost shrink down the number of books and focus on the main X characters, the ones that most people know. And yet, at the same time, now with the books being solicited, they're going to have just as many as they did before. So I don't think that's the plan.
Well, the genius move I thought they had was when they brought the characters back and they experienced 15 years. There's one person acting as their spokesperson.
Yes.
That's the only person we know for certain that went with them.
Yes.
Others may have stayed. Others may have gone. Any mutant is fair game to use or say, no, they went on Krakoa.
Yep.
So they left a lot of options open there other than the main mutants that we know are sticking around.
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you think of the backups?
Some of them were okay. Some were decent. Some were so-so. Overall, I felt like I enjoyed half of them.
I thought the Nightcrawler one was good.
The Nightcrawler was good.
But it's dealing with the fallout of Nightcrawler's latest, quote-unquote, true origin.
Yeah.
Which he's had a few over the years. The Professor X one made it feel like he's going to play a role in the mutant stuff moving forward, even if we don't necessarily see him for a while.
Exactly. So I enjoyed that one.
So, and then there were just a ton of teases for the upcoming titles and stuff.
Exactly. There was teases. So that's where you don't really know. But overall, I came out of it hoping for good things coming out of this.
Yeah, I think they did a good job landing the ending on this and not doing a scorched earth or a reboot or any of the other kind of obvious things. And they pulled a nice twist out for it.
Yeah, I would agree. They set it up where they didn't throw out the baby with the bathwater. It happened. Which, instead of just throwing it away, I was so afraid that going into it, that they were going to somehow reset and this is the new timeline, you know, the new life of, and they didn't do that, thank God.
They kind of couldn't, because if they did, how do you deal with everybody else that's not a mutant?
Exactly. It would have messed up everything.
Oh yeah, big time, big time.
But overall, it was decent. It was expensive. Did I love it? No. Did they do a good job? Yeah, I think they did a good job, and they did a service to the X characters and goodbye Krakoa era.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to phrase it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it either, but I thought it was solid.
Yeah.
Shall we move over to the other publishers?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Okay, I'm starting. All right. I'm going to start with something. It is back, Department of Truth number 23. And I was so worried because this book has been gone for about 2 years. And I was like, where in the hell did it go? It didn't finish. It just, I stopped getting it and I didn't stop ordering it. And so I felt like, wow, it's finally back. This is awesome. And how are they going to get me caught up? It ruined their momentum, but they didn't get me caught up. It kind of picked up with a story where what happened before wasn't thrown away, but they're kind of going into the past a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping they get us caught up a little bit more later on. So the focal point of this issue is the recruiting of Lee Harvey Oswald, who's kind of like the head of the Department of Truth, the guy who recruits our character later on, who's the mainstay. And it's before the JFK assassination goes down. The department is newer. They're fighting the Soviet equivalent. And Oswald is kind of like a rebel. So they're just building out the character, showing you who he is as a person. He doesn't always listen to directions. And they're fighting against the Soviet Red Hats. And the Soviets are way ahead of the game. And I thought they did something very clever with this. They went because the Soviet Union took over Berlin and captured all of East Germany. Before we ever got there, they were the ones who got Hitler's secrets. And Hitler, along with his books, you know, they always said he was to the occult and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the one who came up with the thing, tell a lie big enough and people will believe it. And so that's kind of like the founding of the Department of Truth and the Red Hat on the other side. If you get enough people to believe in the lie, that becomes the truth. And so that becomes the reality of the world.
Yeah.
And I just love this story. I'm just so happy it's back. It triggered it to where I remember the things that happened before. I don't remember everything, but I was able to jump in here and enjoy it with them taking a 2-year break, which was really unfortunate.
Cool. I'm glad you were able to get back into the story.
Yeah, which is hard to do. So, and like I said, they didn't, it's literally almost starting with a new story, but kind of wink, wink, nod, nod to, yeah, that's going on over there.
Cool. All right. My first one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Usagi Yojimbo Saturday Morning Adventures number 1. It's a one shot.
That is a heck of a title. Holy crap.
It is a long title.
Wow.
Now, obviously, I read Usagi Yojimbo. I am familiar with the turtles and stuff. This is part of what I think they're doing as a Saturday Morning Adventures kind of a branding over at IDW. And it's funny because there was a footnote early on where they clearly realize we don't know or recall the 1987 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles continuity, but they felt the need to address that anyways in the story.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of funny, but this thing is completely cartoon style, has that Saturday morning feel and tone to it in all of the right ways. It's clearly building on these characters having met before because there's fallout from that meeting. They have a new adventure and stuff like that. It was a ton of fun. Now, it was $5.99, so it wasn't cheap, but I definitely felt like I got my money's worth, and this is something that I think is suitable for all ages. I enjoyed it great at my age. I think you could give it to a kid if they're familiar with the cartoons of the turtles and stuff. I think they'd have no problem with this.
Very cool. Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Ton of fun.
All right. My pick?
Yeah.
Are you still getting Ferals?
Yes. This was the last issue I'm still getting.
Okay. You cut it, even though it was decent. Okay. I enjoyed this issue of Ferals, number 4, and I didn't know it was going to be an ongoing You Read Better on the solicit, but I've been enjoying it, so I'm on for the ride. And this comic's pretty good, and I'm typically not a fan of the anthropomorphic thing, but you get basically the herd of cats, and one of them, the kind of like the star, the cat who's been set up as a star is Lord. His name is Lord. And they're trying to find some food and go back to the house where he's from. And it was really clever because you get background on the world by the cats accidentally turning on the television set. And you hear about, oh, you know, lock the doors. There's been an outbreak of this, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah.
The way they used that to get some exposition out was kind of funny.
Yeah. And the cats are like, why is that on? You know, like confused about the whole TV thing. And then Lord is just such a good character, wholehearted, nice, trying to be friendly with the dog that he knew and things like that. And you can't be as good as you want to be. But also there's some explanation about how Lord or why Lord is the way he is. And that was so sad. It was a little bit of a tearjerker moment. You're like, oh, this poor cat. I felt bad for him. And it was just, I felt like this was a really good issue. And I think a lot of people will like this if they read it.
Yeah, I think it's a great series. It's just not something I need to be reading. I would disagree with your assessment of it being anthropomorphic, because I don't want people thinking it's like humanoid cats or whatever.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. They're just cats talking.
They're just cats. They get the dialogue and the thought balloon type stuff. They're the lead characters.
True, true.
And it's clear, well, we can understand the humans on TV, they can't.
Yes, yes. Which was very clever, and I loved how they did that.
Yeah. I think it's a solid story. I think it's some terrific art. It's just not something I need on my reading list every month.
No, and I understand that. Like, the first one was a miniseries, and it was dogs. It was Stray Dogs, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. I loved it, but it was only 5 issues. This one's ongoing. The thing that I like about it is I'm a dog person. I had dogs, you know, my whole life I had dogs, but I married a cat person. So now I have cats. Cats have grown on me. So I really like my cats now. And it's kind of cool. You know, you go to the backup, people are always sending in a picture of their cats. And so it just speaks to me. I'm like, I like this. It's kind of cool.
I'm going to be curious to see how long they can make this go, because I think it's good enough that if things go their way, this could go for the long haul. And it being kind of a cat version of The Walking Dead, kind of, sort of, but not quite, would be hilarious.
Yeah, it feels so Walking Dead-like. It has that creepy, eerie feel while not being as grotesque as The Walking Dead can be at times.
Well, it's a dangerous world. They're just trying to survive. There are a lot of things acting against them. this case, it's the humans sometimes, because, hey, we see an animal, it must have the rabies stuff, let's kill it and whatnot, and they're clean so far. There are going to be losses throughout time. If they can get more characters in, that'll be interesting. On the one hand, I am curious where it goes. On the other hand, I'm not curious enough to follow it to see where it goes.
No, I know exactly what you're saying, and no fault to you, to each his own, but this issue was very clever. It made you feel something for Lord. You felt bad for the cat. You're like, oh my God.
Again, we got more characterization in that issue than we get in some entire arcs of other books.
True. I thought it was a really good read. Fun read.
Yeah.
All right. Over to you for your second one.
All right. My second one is Star Trek, Sons of Star Trek.
Oh, all right.
I am still enjoying this. This is the third issue. We got some really great use of Nog, Jake, and Alexander from the main TV Star Trek universe. We got some great use of Shaw from the Picard series. We're getting some other characters like Morn and a few others rounding out this series. And all in all, it's a fun alternate universe that has some depth to it. They're not just, oh, it's a different universe, so who cares, or going for the over-the-top version. Some of these characters are very akin to the ones we're familiar with, like Shaw. Others are exactly what we would expect them to be if alliances were a little different. So we get one of the Cardassians is the captain of the ship.
Ah.
Because the Federation and the Cardassians were allies in this world. And then we get Jasdia Dax, or Jasdia, but she didn't get the Dax symbiont. So again, there's some differences there, and it's interesting and it's fun. And there are a couple other kind of second generation characters sprinkled throughout here that may play a bigger part later, may not, don't know. But all in all, it's a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying it. They're doing a good job with it.
Very cool. Every time you said Cardassians, I'm thinking of the Kardashians, the girls with the big behinds.
Yeah, but not that. These are the people with the bumps on the forehead, not that that narrows them down in the Star Trek universe.
Exactly. I'm sorry. All right, so on to the next thing.
You're not sorry. I know this.
I'm not sorry. All right. I will give you a choice. I'm going to let you pick. Dealer's choice. Okay, I know. Redcoat 3 or Rook Exodus 3. I received both of them, and they're both good.
Go for Redcoat.
Okay, Redcoat 3, I felt like this was the best issue of Redcoat yet. It just in my opinion. I think if you're a fan of like DC's Fables, this type of comic may speak to you a little bit. So you're getting more into like the American lore and the real stories behind it. Just like what you do with Fables, you're getting the story of the Fables, but like the real story behind the characters.
Mm.
So it's like a recharacterization of Americana, which is kind of cool. It's just different. Like you get the hatchet that Washington used to cut down the cherry tree, and that plays a big part in there. You get Johnny Appleseed in here. So you're getting more and more of these characters popping up, which makes it, like I said, I got that Fables vibe from it, even though it's not the same thing. And you get some time jumping that's happening in the storytelling, which is working for me. And because the guys lived for centuries, you know, basically since the American Revolution, and we're getting closer to modern times, because in the modern times, you're getting a young Albert Einstein. Mm. And so Albert Einstein is a boy with his horrible German accent, which they alliterate in there, which is a little bit annoying. But I'll tell you what, this is a ton of fun if you are into Americana, if you are into seeing different takes on American things, and having a guy who is not a hero, but almost like an anti-hero, be the star. This is a very enjoyable book, and I feel like Geoff Johns is having a lot of fun with it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever read Jack of Fables?
I did.
Because it sounds similar to that, and I felt that one dealt a lot more with the Americana stuff than the main Fable series.
So I almost wonder if this is a nod to it, you know, Geoff Johns in this book.
Could be.
Something that he enjoyed. Not saying it is, but it could be. Maybe that is something he really enjoyed, and this is his own take. And I've been liking this book. It's fun. And I will say, if you like time jumping aspects, so you would like that in this book. I'll just throw that out there.
I like time travel. I don't like time jumping. When they just skip over years, that gets annoying.
There's a lot of time. But this happened then, this happened then. Yeah, so it does jump a little bit, but it's not annoying. It works.
That's funny.
Yeah, it works. And by the way, I'm going to let you pick yours, but then there was two books I just wanted to mention, but not really go into.
Sure.
All right, over to you.
I'm going to go with Gatchaman number one. Also, probably talk about the Ken Deathmatch one shot also a little.
Yeah, how did that work? Because a lot of people called that out in previous Spotlight. I figured it wasn't for me, so I didn't get it, but
I am familiar with the Gatchaman property. I watched some of Battle of the Planets as a kid. I'm not going to say I am knee-deep or hip-deep in the material.
Okay.
I thought it was a fun story. I felt it read kind of like an episode of the show. It had about that much content. It looked like I thought the show ought to look like and stuff like that. There was, as expected for a first issue, a lot of setup, but there was also a lot of action and plot progression.
Ah, cool.
I felt it was a good revival of the property and not just assuming we know everything about it. So they establish things, they set stuff up, they move some things forward. I thought that was good. There was also the Scotchman Ken Deathmatch one-shot that came out featuring one of the characters, Ken, which I think is the lead Gotchaman. I liked it, but I'm also glad it was a one-shot. It was okay, but not good enough for me to think I should get this as a second series, and it felt way too soon for a side title, given Gotchaman 1 came out the same week.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
And the one-shot was $7, $6.99.
Oh, pricey. Pricey.
And it was fine, but the main one, it hit the buttons for me, because this is a Super Sentai adjacent property.
Okay.
You know, it's not the same thing as Super Sentai, but it's close enough. And it was fun. I think if they can keep the quality up, I think it'll do well. I just worry that in addition to the one-shot, they've got another miniseries coming out, and they may be oversaturating the property a little bit if they're not careful.
Yeah, I kind of worry about that. This is Mad Cave, by the way, I'm pretty sure,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried because they're doing that same thing with Flash Gordon. You know, we got the series, and we got the quarterly, and I'm like, we haven't even gotten the first issue. And I'm like, man, I still haven't gotten one of these issues, and I've ordered all this stuff. So I'm hoping. Fingers are crossed.
And we got Defenders of the Earth. I skipped out on Defenders of the Earth because Flash Gordon, The Next Generation, didn't appeal to me as a concept. And I skipped the quarterly because it felt like it was going a little more horror, a little more afield. So I'm just getting the main Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I ordered all of them, and I have a feeling I'm going to get burned on maybe the side properties, I'll call them.
Can happen.
Versus the main Flash Gordon. So.
Yeah.
Okay, one thing. I'll tell you, I've been enjoying our back issue spotlights on Astro City.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Busiek, I think, is a fantastic writer. He had a new book come out called Free Agents. Did you get that?
I did, but I thought it came out in July.
Okay, I will change the date on here.
I'm sorry.
Once again, you know, I did not get that book, and I will not discuss it.
Me and my stay within the month for the monthly spotlight attitude. So annoying.
Good Lord. Okay, another one. Then I'll wrap up with my last thing that I was going to just mention. Okay, Void Rivals. Remember how I tell you, you were like wondering how they were going to incorporate Transformers and would it work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Void Rivals works. They went Transformer heavy in this issue. And so like you get a Transformer. There's Zertonians and the Agorians. These are the two characters. They have gems in their forehead. Oh, they're Energon charge ports. So they're getting into this whole organic synthetic Autobots charging them up. I'm like, this is enough to where I'm like, I am not into the Transformer universe. I don't want to read this little one-off Transformer book. If they don't turn it around quick, I'm out.
Yeah, I can see where they dived a little deeper into the mythos of the Transformers than you might care for.
If you're a Transformers fan, that might be great for you. But I'm not reading any of those books because I'm like, I don't want to have all these Transformer and G.I. Joe books, and I don't want an Energon universe. And if they're going to do that with this, okay, Enemy Mine worked for me. This doesn't.
The problem is, Void Rivals is neither fish nor fowl, because the rest of the stuff, Transformers, G.I. Joe, all those other Hasbro properties, and this is not the first time there's been an attempt to do a Hasbro-verse. IDW tried it for a bit, and it flopped. But all of those are within the same corporate IP and whatnot. Void Rivals isn't.
It isn't at all, yeah.
So Kirkman tying his stuff to a licensed property that will at some point get yanked out from under him is a very interesting decision.
Yeah, it's almost like I feel like you have to pick up these issues or the trade when he does it, because he will lose the IP one day and this stuff will never be reprinted because this is his personal. He created these characters unless someone licenses them from him.
Well, and maybe he's a huge Transformer fan and this is just something he'd always been wanting to do. And if so, more power to him.
Yeah.
But from a business point of view, I think it's a very questionable decision.
Yeah, I would agree. And I was digging the Enemy Mine thing. It's just I'm not into the whole Energon universe. So for me, it was just disappointing. It's like, okay, here we are.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it does. It does. More and more these days, it seems like.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I got a number of things that I'm either dropping or have completed or were one-shots and stuff like that. So a number of the things that were on my list this time just won't be next time.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I cut Captain America. There was a couple indies that I already cut. So stuff is always getting cut, but every now and then there's a few extra books. Like, I ordered all that Flash Gordon stuff. I still haven't gotten one issue of it, but I'm ordering it.
Yeah.
Hoping it's good.
Yeah, I'm hoping the main Flash Gordon stuff is good. The rest, I don't care.
Yeah.
So, a couple of things coming up. First off, the next monthly comic spotlight is probably going to be a little bit more of a gap between episodes, just scheduling issues behind the scenes. And then the one after it will be probably a few weeks later, and then the one after it a few weeks later. So we'll catch up. But there's just some logistical issues here and there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the August preview spotlight, the deadline for that is going to be Saturday, August 3rd. That's a week earlier than normal. And part of that is just some logistical stuff. I am just swamped with some stuff both that weekend and completely swamped the weekend after. Which is why it's a week earlier. I wasn't going to be able to do it the following week.
Yeah.
I really need those clips early for this one, if at all possible. This last preview spotlight, number 200, we had an insane number of clips come in. Awesome turnout. It was, 3 hours, 40-minute episode?
Yeah, it was big.
Longest episode I've done. And that's beating out, the JLA Avengers one and a few other things, and the two-parter preview spotlight from when the New 52 launched.
Ah!
So great turnout, but 2.5 hours worth of those clips came in pretty much at the deadline.
So we need them sooner.
And if I get that this time, I'm not positive I can get the episode done on the timeline I've set up for it.
Yeah. Just so you know, I'm not going to even wait for my catalogs. I'm going to go online to get the digital stuff, and I'll be letting everyone know on the Slack channel too to get it done early before August 3rd if they can.
Yeah. If it's a couple of days earlier, that's awesome. And normally I give people, hey, you need a couple of more hours, another day or whatever, not a big deal. I usually leave the Dropbox open for another 24 hours. I'm not doing that this time. There's going to come a point after that 9 a.m. where if I don't have the clips, I don't know that I can get them in. I'll try. I'll do whatever I can. But this is one of those things where I just have a crazy busy weekend, some time constraints that are just kind of out of my control and stuff, so I'm trying to stick to the regular format versus in other times we've done some other formats, which some people have liked, some people haven't and whatnot, but I'm trying to keep people in the rhythm of getting the clips in, but this is just a week earlier. So once we get done recording this, and we're recording this episode on July 23rd, I'm going to be sending out that first announcement, which is, again, a week earlier than I normally would be to get stuff in, and then I'll send that next reminder out a week from now, and then, again, I got to have those clips by 9 a.m. on that Saturday. And again, if I get them in before, that makes my life way easier. For this preview spotlight 200, I didn't get a whole lot of sleep that weekend. And it took until the Tuesday for me to get all the stuff edited and put together to get it in. I just had other things going on. It was, again, great episode. Happy to do it, but it was very taxing on me. But again, great turnout for that. Hopefully we'll get a lot of clips and stuff. Still want to get more voices. I want to get more participation with the podcast and stuff. I know there are a lot of listeners out there, but if all you do is listen, I don't know you exist. I don't know what you like. I don't know what you don't like. I don't know if what we're doing is working for you or not. I don't know you're even out there. So send in clips, send in emails, get on the Slack channel, get on the forum. If you want to get on the Slack channel or forum, in addition to filling out the form on the front page of the website, email me. I cannot tell you, particularly for the forum, how many bot submissions I get.
Ah, okay.
I look at the so-and-so's name. I look at the email address that looks very fake and has nothing to do with the name. And it's like, nobody's reached out to me. I don't know if there's a person behind this. And the last thing I want to do is open the floodgates for a spam bot onto the forum. We've had that once or twice, and it's a mess to clean up.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
Don't have the time, the interest for that. So again, you just got to reach out. It's not hard to participate. Once you get through that minor bump in the road to get the foot in the door for the Slack channel or the forum.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you. We've got some great conversations. And like the book club coming up, we're going to be doing Future Quest. I think it'll be a ton of fun.
Yeah, I do too. It's going to be a lot of fun. And by the way, just a cheat code to this whole thing. If you guys have anything you want us to do a back issue spotlight on, join the Slack channel and be in the book club. Because if we pick that for a book club, John and I always do a back issue spotlight on it.
Yeah, there's a definite conservation of reading. If I can do one reading and get the book club and an episode out of it, why not?
Exactly.
That's a ton of fun.
It makes it fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, I think right now the next book club is scheduled for Tuesday, August 27th, actually. And we're going to do the first six issues of Future Quest, or at least that's the plan.
Yep, that's a plan.
Check the Slack channel for how to participate and if either the date or the number of issues change. But I'm looking forward to it. Future Quest was a ton of fun.
Me too. I'm looking forward to it.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.